Dear friends, just at the time I'm now leaving physically, I have to say a few words to you. So that if we live according to that, we will be helping our own selves and helping all others. Most of you have been put on the way already. Those who have been put on the way, they should develop that thing from day to day by regular practice. All of you have got some experience of light of God and also the music of the spheres. I've already given instructions how we can develop. But the most part of it depends on our way of living. Truth is above all, but true living is still above truth. I think each one of us knows so much. Knowing so much won't help you unless you put it into practice. Live up to it. The food that is digested can give you strength. And the food which is not digested just gives us disease, you see. So everybody knows, very common sense talk, that they are the creator, they are the maker of all this universe. He is everlasting, unchanging permanence. The world he has made that is changing, being made of matter, which is composition of so many atoms. We are also conscious entities. We are spirit in man. And God is eternal, so we are also eternal. We have got this man body, which is considered to be the highest in all creation, and the highest aim before us is to know God. So man body is a golden opportunity that we have got to know God. And to know God, we must know ourselves first, that we can do by self-analysis, by liberating ourselves from mind and outgoing faculties. Knowing oneself, then we can know that power which is controlling all the universe and keeping us in the world. For that purpose, we have done various schools of thought. Blessed we are, we are social beings, we must have some social body to live in. But the highest purpose of joining any school of thought is to find the way back to God, to find the missing link within us. So with God's grace, we have found some that missing link, which is just keeping you in the body, and that is out of respect of that, or the manifestation of it, that is light and sound principle. This has been the basic teachings of all masters who came in the past. I gave you instances, quotations, and various scriptures last night in other ways, you see. So, as you are now put on the very way which is the way back to God, now what remains on us to do now is to just grab in a way that we may progress and reach the ultimate goal of perfection. So by having initiation, one does not become a true, perfect ideal all at once. One is put on the way to be perfect. So simply by initiation one man does not become a true man, meaning a satsangi you call it. Satsangi world means sat means permanent, everlasting, unchangeable permanence, which is God. And sangi means to become a constant form of the visit. That's the style, you see. So we have to live in accordance with the principles that are taught to us in thought, world and deed. So action speaks louder than words, and thoughts are even more potent than that. So satsang is must in his conduct reveal that he is the follower of a true master. Your life should prove it, and what for that master prescribes. Love God and love all peace. That is the main teachings of all masters. So teachings of all masters hang on this very statement. One is to love God and the other is to love all beings. So we are all, as we explained to you, that we are conscious entities, thoughts of the ocean of all consciousness, the same controlling power keeping us in the body. So to say, we are two children of God, our brothers and sisters in God. So this is the angle of vision that all masters had when they gained the look from that level. They considered all humanity as their family members. So the first lesson that we get by coming to your master, that he says, we are all brothers and sisters in God. But how to realize that thing, the way it is suggested by rising above body consciousness, open the inner eye to see the light of God, and that when that is developed, you see that very light is within you as well, and also in the whole universe. In that when you have that eye open, you begin to see really we are all one, not two. So this is our ignorance that has to be removed by actual living. So Master Saul tells us, first thing is love. The man is one who is seeking his wife. Calling a man, if he is love, must satisfy. God is love. Our souls, being of the same essence as that of God, is also love. And the way back to God is also to love. If we love God, God delights in every heart. How can you hate others? All that when they came, they said that you will love one another, Christ said, so that the people may know you are coming to me. This is the first lesson that we learn at the feet of some master. Generally when you go to some teacher or somebody, they simply say, our formation is the only truth, all of the sustenance. Well, truth is one. All masters who say in the past, those who realize that they say the same thing. And to notice, we must have a true way of living. And true way of living is what to say. An ounce of practice is more than a ton of theories. Unless you live up to being, what is the use of knowing the principle of one which he does not live up to it? I tell you, I remember a case of Arjuna, one of the five Pandavas in India, what did he say? The king appointed one teacher to just give them education, you see. To our 3 months, they were just giving instructions, and after 3 months, the examination was held by the teacher. The other four brothers, some just remembered the whole book, the others did half the book. But when the time when the turn of Arjun came up, the Arjun told them, "Master, teacher, I have learnt only one sentence. What is that? Well, tell the truth on it. Tell the truth." He said, "That I have learnt fully. And I have learnt also not fully but half, twice the word. And what it was, don't be angry." And the teacher was all wrath. He said, "What will I tell to the king? Well, in 3 months you have given this child only one sentence to learn. He has learnt another only half." He began to slap him on the face. Once, twice, thrice, four times. He was just blind. Then later on, when he told, "Why don't you tell the truth?" He says, and he said, "Vasanda, I tell you the truth. In the beginning when you slapped me on the face, I was not angry. When you slapped me 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 times, I had some anger. So I wish you people to learn that. Love God and love all of it. Only love this thing. And all everything will come up. Love and all things shall be added unto you." So now the greatest gift from God, I would say, and that is already ingrained in us, but that has been yielded to our own selves, to our own families, within our own classes of schools of thought, or within our own country. Yes. The result is what? If there's that love can deal with an old self, we won't care you for our family, maybe die. They love ourselves. And the race congealed in the family only, there is conflict between family and self. And that extends to all your classes. The result is that, you know, religious wars. Thousands of men have been killed on a clear religious differences. If your love extends to cover all country, you become pettiness. You love the men of your own country more than anybody else. The result is war. Two great wars have been already there and third is impending. Millions of people have been killed. So our love should expand to cover all creation. Let us pray like Guru Nanak. "Peace be unto all the world, O Lord. Our love should expand." And now, you see, all masters said so. That love is what? Love is God and God is love, you see. If you live up to that, the love will be what? Those who do not understand love cannot understand God, for God is love. Love and all things shall be added unto you. And 10th Guru of the 6th tells us, "Serve all, irrespective whether you belong to one religion or the other. I tell you the truth, God is approved only through love. Remain in any religion you like. We have to develop love and devotion for God in all these various rites and rituals, saying of prayers. They go to develop love and devotion if they live in us. If that be so, then you have derived the full benefit, as I said, of saying of prayers, of performing such a nice ritual. Otherwise, that is only automatic muttering, you see, which has no effect with your heart. The love is a subject of the heart, and God is also a subject of the heart, not a head mind. Our head should go along with the heart, then it's all right. Head alone won't be able to give you anything. Well, for that purpose, the Master tells us well, love. Where there is love, I tell you nothing. Love in all things shall be added to you. You are not loving somebody. Are you going to harm him? Or even you will harm anybody who is connected with him, who is dear to him? You say no. I love you. You have got children, will I kill your children? I will offer them things to win your pleasure. So love is the basic thing. On the wings of love you can fly to heavens. So remain in any religion you like, this is the first thing. With whom you have got, are you going to defraud him? Are you going to tell lies to him? Are you going to deceive him? I don't think so. If you go for anybody, you will always look to his convenience from that level. For want of love, all this unrest in the world. You see, God made man with equal privilege from God, born the same way, the outer and inner constitution the same, and the same we are divine in nature, we are spirit in man, and the same spirit of God is keeping us controlled in the body. We are all one. So love beautifies everything. Love knows no burdens. Love knows no compensations. So love knows service and sacrifice. So this, the way you have been put in, the more God in love and God in expression, which is manifested in the form of light and music of the spheres, the more you come in contact with that, the more you are charged with love because God is love. The love ingrained in you is cleared up. Then your love for God is love for all around us. So with whom ever you have got love, naturally you have to serve in your best. Without any outward acting or putting. Therefore, if needs be, you sacrifice your everything for him. For whom? For him whom you love. I just quote you a parable from the Puranas of the Hindus. They say that God Vishnu, the God of nourishment, invited all good and bad people to a big banquet. It's sorry, you see. The line of people came up, the good men sat in one row. Also the others also sat in their own rows, and the all food was served. Very handsome, rich, they could eat well, but the God Vishnu stood up. He says, well, dear friends, all this is what is laid before you is for you alone. Eat it to your heart's content. But I will lay one to me. And what is that? Don't bend your arms to bring the food to your mouth. Saying what he was talking, what he says. If you want that, send our arms out and the food can to our mouth. Most of the people did not follow. They racked their brains, but could not solve. He said, and they left in disappointment. They simply considered that the God wish they had received good wishes. They went there. Others who were good people, they sat down, they said, it is one, the God of nourishment, God cannot be tell us anything which is not good to our own self, there must be some meaning in it. They considered all this and they found the solution very easy. But everybody sat down, you see, ate the food, instead of bending that way, they simply stretched to the most of others. You see? All were set. This is terrible to show what knows sufferings, love. If you are willing to feed the others, then you will be fed. We feed our own children, why other children die of hunger. If you begin to feed others, then nobody will remain hungry. We amass money, whole money, for our own self, resulting in the self-poor. Some are having many enjoyments, the others can live in one loaf of bread. So love knows service. If you care to keep others' homes clean, would not your house be clean? It so happened that these sweepers went on strike. And the result was for 3 or 4 days regularly. And there was filth at home. What the people do? They simply took that filth and put on the wash to the other house. The result was, instead of thinking that will make others home filthy, they would have taken it to let others house clean and put it somewhere else. The whole city was in a bad order, such events. So if we are out there to have others' house clean, then your house will be clean. Very simple thing, you'll find for that little labor is required. So those who are only after their own advancement, one's own, I mean to say, feed his own self, are clothed on their own self, naturally other will suffer. So it means we should sacrifice our every interest for the sake of others. If needs be, we must lay down our lives for the sake of others. This is one lesson, you see, if you learn, there can be no conflict, there can be no wars. Why are these wars, you know? Between family and family. One family wants to feed his own children. No, not to us. Each one must help it. Well, somebody has to be broke. Each religion, man follows religion, he loves the men of his own class and says to us, when we are all children of God, only God is nice in every heart. No? Why all this stuff? If you love others, help others, you have known better truth than they do before them. They will understand why the countries are at war. You want to keep their own countries away. Don't care what other countries are fearing. Result is war. I met some political heads. I told him, well, look here, so many children of God have been placed under your cares. Each country should live in the other slave. If one president of the king of a country stand up, look after the children of God placed under his care properly, others should help. What is the use of killing millions of people? very simple formula, how it works. Wonderful. So in our saying, now and all things shall be added unto you, it meant something definite, you see. So for want of love, all this culture arises, whether it is in the social way, whether it is in the religious way, or whether it is in the political way. So we should be embodiments of love. Love should overflow from every pore of our body. And the faith is one, you know, who is overflowing with love, for whom? For all the world of us. So this is the only thing part of what I can tell you. You have been put on the way, develop that from day to day by regular practice, and have true living. And what true living consists in, you know, in love. Love knows service, love knows sacrifice, love knows helping others in whom you are loved, there's no attitude. Attitude arises when we love our own self, our own individual self. Yes, I am greater, I know better. If I love others, you say, you try to, out of humility. A true lover is a true humble man. You see? Saint Augustine was asked, what is the way back to God? And he said, what? First humility, second humility, and third humility. Unless you have humility, you will not dare to go to somebody else. He dwells in the throne, I mean, conceit that he knows love in man, he holds very high position in life, he is a very rich man, well, he would not like to go anywhere. Even if you go to somebody, even their humility is required. Sit down at his feet, see, understand what he says, what little you know, more or less, that you have got with you already. Just listen to him, what he says. Perhaps he might have to say something more than you do not know. So glass of water, glass, waking glass, if it is put under a tumbler of full of water, that will be filled. If that glass is placed only the tumbler of water, then you will not be very deeply glass. And if you got by the grace of God some blessing from God, it is His grace. It is His grace, not you and your friends, you see. A fruit laden tree, when that any branch of it is full of fruits, that is, bowed down to the earth. Even if you got the true blessing of God, and that is to know Him, you will bow down to everybody. Because you see the same light in everybody. You are the true lover of God, who is the true lover of the humanity. This one lesson you have to learn. If you have this one, you will become, you won't, you will observe strict violence in thought, word and deed. You will become truthful, never deceive anybody, you see. Never kill anybody. Never hate anybody. You will become the abode of all virtues. So one love of God, you see, and God, love of God, somehow, as I referred to in the beginning, that God is love, and God is expression power, which is manifested in two ways. God is light and God is music of the spheres. The more you are given a contact with that, by rising above body consciousness, the love in you, ingrained in you, by coming in contact with the whole ocean of love, that will be flared up. Every saint has its past, and every sinner has its future. Even the robbers can be conscious. Man can change. And he also can change. God willed it. Those who have got the man body, he has the first right to become perfect and to know God.
Hello, and welcome to the Satsang for Master Kirpal Singh. The recording you just heard was the first half of Master's talk called The First Thing is Love, given in Escondido, California, on December 15, 1963. Our reader this evening is Rudy Cascone. Hello, Rudy.
Hello, David. Thank you. Today I'll be reading from Master's book, The Crown of Life, Chapter 2, starting on page 20 in my book, Yog Vidya and Yog Sadhana, The Path of Yoga in Theory and Practice, Number 1, The Basis of Ancient Yoga, Origin and Technique of the Yoga System. From the Yajnavalkaya Smriti, we learn that Haran Yargabaha, Brahma, was the original teacher of yoga. But the yoga system, as a system, was first expounded by Patanjali, the great thinker and philosopher, in his Yoga Sutras, sometime before the Christian era. The yoga system is one of the six schools of Indian philosophy, Kat Shastras, that were systematized and developed to set in order the Indian thought concerning the cosmos, the individual soul, and their interrelation. These philosophies resulted from an attempt at reformation and restoration of the ancient and time-honored concepts of psychological and metaphysical matters. The word yoga in common parlance means method. In its technical sense, it connotes yoking or union of the individual soul with the oversoul or God. The English word yoke signifies to unite or to join together and to place oneself under yoke, i.e. discipline. In this context, the yoga system denotes a methodical discipline which aims on the one hand at vayog, unyoking, or separation of the individual soul from mind and matter, and on the other hand, yog, or yoking it with Brahman. It therefore means and implies the search for the transcendental and the divine in man, or to find the noumenal in the phenomenal by reducing the physical and metaphysical states to their most essential common factor, the basis and the substratum of all that exists, whether visible or invisible. And as such, yogic method implies a system of mighty effort, most strenuous endeavor, and hard striving to attain perfection through the control of the physical body and the ever-active mind and self-assertive ego or will, the searching and questioning intellect, the pranic vibrations, the restless faculties, and powerful senses. Allegorically, the present state of the individualized soul is described as riding in the chariot of the body, with dazed intellect as the charioteer, the infatuated mind as the reins, and the senses as the powerful steeds, rushing headlong into the field of sense objects and sense pleasures. All this goes to show that a student of yoga discipline has to undertake a course of an extremely strict and ordered activity as may help to depersonalize the soul and free it from all limiting adjuncts of life, physical, mental, and supramental, and then to contact it with the power of God and achieve union with God. The word yoga is, however, not to be confused with yog maya and yogic powers, which denote respectively the supreme power of God per se, creating, controlling, and sustaining the entire creation, and the psychic powers, riddhis and siddhis, that one may acquire on the path of yoga. And again, yog vidya, or the science of yoga, has a twofold aspect, the physical as well as the spiritual. In the former sense, it has come to mean a yogic system of physical culture aiming at an all-around development of the various component parts of the human body. But we are concerned here with the spiritual aspect of yoga that aims at the well-being of the spirit or soul, the real life principle in man, at present neglected and ignored. The term yoga in this context is, therefore, to be strictly confined to one of the systems of philosophic thought as derived from the Vedas, and is concerned with the sole object of regaining the soul through spiritual discipline, now lost in the activity of mind and matter with which it has come to identify itself by long and constant association for eons upon eons. Yoga, in brief, stands for a technique of reorientation and reintegration of the spirit in man, the lost continent of his true self. Fundamental concepts. Yoga presupposes two factors that count for the creation of the world. One, Ishwa, or God, and Avidya, or Maya. While the former is all-intelligent, the latter is altogether unintelligent. Man, too, is a combination of these two principles. Jiva, or the individual soul, though intrinsically of the same essence as that of God, is encased in mind and matter. The soul, conditioned as it is in the time-space-cause world, has but an imperfect perception and cannot see the reality, the Atman, or the divine ground, in which it rests and from where it gets its luminosity. While Antakaran, or the mind, is the reflector, the Atman is the illuminator, the light of which is reflected through the senses that perceives the world. The world, then, is the conjunction of the seer and the seen. The detachment of this conjunction is the escape, and perfect insight is the means of escape. Salvation, therefore, lies in the isolation of the seer from the seen, the complete detachment of the subjective from all that is objective, physical, mental, and causal, so that the self, which is the seer, may see itself in its own luminosity or light of the void, as it is called. To free the individual soul from the shackles of mind and matter, yoga insists on 1, concentration, 2, active effort or striving, which involves the performance of devotional exercises and mental discipline. The highest form of matter is chit, the unfathomable lake of subliminal impressions, and yoga aims at freeing the inner man or spirit from these fetters. It is the finest and verified principle in matter that constitutes chit, or the little self-ego in man. Though in itself it is essentially unconscious, it is subject to modifications by the operation of the threefold gunas. It has also the capacity to contract and expand according to the nature of the body in which it is lodged from time to time, or according to the surrounding circumstances. This chit or mind, though apparently bounded in each individual, is in fact a part of the all-pervading universal mind. The yoga systems aim at transforming the limited and conditioned mind into the limitless and unconditioned universal mind by developing the sattva, the pure, and by subduing the rajas, the active, and tamas, the dense gunas. In this state, yogins acquire omniscience, being one with the universal mind, brahmandi or nijmanas. Chit is the reflecting mirror for the soul and exists for chatan maya, or matter quickened by soul, which is self-luminous and in whose spiritual light takes place all perception, including the light of knowledge, mental and supramental. The subliminal impressions in the chit cause desires and interests, which in turn produce potencies, and these lead to personality, and thus setting the wheel of the world in perpetual motion. Once the soul is freed from the chit manas, buddhi, and ahankar, it comes to its own and becomes passionless and depersonalized. This is the great deliverance which yoga promises to yogins. At this severance from the fourfold fetters of the mind, the embodied soul, jiva, becomes a freed soul, atman, an individualized, self-luminous, and attains realization as such. Self-realization, then, is the highest aim of yoga. We will now skip to one of the yogas on page 99 of the Crown of Life, chapter 4, called Raja Yoga. As the name indicates and implies, it means the royal road to reintegration. The reintegration of the soul, which is now in a state of disintegration, having lost its cohesion through the diversifying influence of the mind running into so many outgoing channels. This path offers a scientific approach Godward and is best suited to persons gifted with a scientific mind and a scientific outlook, both within and without, and given to experimentation. It is based on the assumption that the true self in man is quite different from and more wonderful than what is commonly supposed and appears to be in the workaday life, where it is subject to limitations that crowd in and press upon it from all sides, making it look for all practical purposes a finite element and not the limitless reality it really is. Again, the experiments involved in Raja Yoga are to be performed on one's own self, unlike those of other sciences in which the whole process involved is one of experiment on outside nature. A Raja Yogin is not expected to take things for granted or to blindly accept an authority, spiritual or otherwise. He is essentially a path of self-experiment in the laboratory of the mind, and he proceeds slowly but steadily, step by step, and never stops until the goal is reached. Man, according to Raja Yoga, is a layered entity and is clothed in so many folds, one within the other, e.g., body, mind, habits, mode of life, inherited and acquired, senses and addictions, vital airs, restless mind, with innumerable mental vibrations, ever-active will, and egocentricity, etc., all of which form koshas, or veils, covering the Atman. Within these lies the crest jewel of being itself, the ever-abiding self underneath the phenomenal personality. And thus, complete liberation, mukti, consists in complete release from the countless finitizing processes enveloping the infinite ocean of the creative life principle, so as to have all power, all life, all wisdom, all joy, all bliss, and everything else in its fullness. In other words, it means depersonalization of the soul by literally tearing down the personality or the mask which an actor dons when he comes on the stage to play his role. The job of a Raja Yogin then is to unmask the reality within him by removing the numberless masks or false identifications, and thereby to separate the great self from the enshrouding sheaths by which it is encumbered. Ashtanga Yoga, or the Eightfold Path of Patanjali, leads to what is commonly known as Raja Yoga. It is the ladder whereby one achieves Nirbij Samadhi, Unmani, Siha Vastha, or the Toryopad, which is the crown of all the yoga systems and the efflorescence of the yogic art. It deals with the training of the mind and its psychic powers to the extent which may lead to enlightenment, whereby true perception is attained and one gains an equipoise, a state of waking trance. His soul is unshakably fixed inwardly at its center, Sam, even though he may apparently be engaged in worldly pursuits like the rest of mankind. This state is the pinnacle of all yogic endeavors and practices, and once attained, the yogin, while living in the world, is yet no longer of the world. This is how Raj Rishi Janak and Lord Krishna, the prince of the yogins, lived in the world, ever engaged in worldly pursuits and activities, carrying the wheel of the world in their hands in perpetual motion, and yet with a still center fixed in the divine plane. All their actions were characterized by activity in inactivity. Such is the apex in the yoga system, a state in which the senses and the mind and the intellect come to a standstill. In the Katha Upanishad we have, when all the senses are still, when the mind is at rest, when the intellect wavers not, that, say the wise, is the highest state. In the Kavyalayapad, the state of supreme realization. It aims at samadhi, the final step in Patanjali's yoga system, whereby the individual is de-individualized and perceives within him the totality, unbounded, an unembodied, limitless and free, all-pervading like the ether. It is seeing all things in the aspect of eternity. A few words about the state of samadhi may not be amiss here. Samadhi may be conscious or superconscious. In the one, the mind remains conscious of the object, while in the other, there is an inner calm in which one sees and gets a real insight, as if in a flash, of the object as it really is. It is seeing with the soul, or the inner spiritual eye, when our bodily eyes are shut. This is immediate and direct perceptual knowledge as distinct from mediate knowledge, i.e., through the medium of the smoke-colored glasses of the senses and the mind and the intellect. It is a state of still silence, far removed from the maddening world outside. It is a mystical state in which chit, manas, buddhi, and ahankar all lose their respective functions and the disentangled and de-individualized self alone shines in its own luminosity. It is about this state that Vyasa tells us, yoga can be best known only through yoga, for yoga becomes manifest through yoga. The most sacred syllable of the Raja Yogins is Aum. In the Manduka Upanishads, we have a detailed account of this word. It is the same as the holy word in the Gospel of St. John. It is the Kalma, or the Bangi Quadim, of the Muslims, the Akash Bani, or Vak Devi, of the ancient Rishis, and the Ujit, or the Nad, of the Upanishads, the Sharosha of Zoroastra, and Nam, or Shabd, of the Masters. The world of the Vedas all originated from this syllable, Aum. In Gita, it is said, the Brahman who reciting and thinking upon Aum goes forth, abandoning the body, goes on to the highest path. Lord Krishna, speaking of himself, says, I am Omkar. I am Pranva. In all the Vedas, in speech, I am Akfrash, the one syllable. In the Upanishads, it is stated, Am is the bow, the mind the arrow, Brahman is the target. Know ye that Brahman, with concentration, hit the target with singleness of vision, ek agarat. And then, like an arrow becoming one with the target, the individual soul will become identified with the Brahman. A single vibration in Brahman, ek aham bahu sayam, caused all the lokas, and with it brought into being all planes, spiritual, causal, astral, and physical, with their countless divisions and subdivisions. The physical vibrations in man correspond to the one original vibration that led to the projection of Shruti, or the universe, with all its trinities like Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva, Sattva, Rajas, and Tamas, Jagrat, Swapan, and Shushuti, all of which are contained in Aum, the Lord of the Three Worlds. Lord Yama, the god of death, exhorting Nachiketa, said, the goal human formerly extolled by all the Vedas, for which man strives with all his tapas, is, in brief, Aum. Similarly, the term Pranva means something ever new and fresh, unchanging and eternal. Kutatashnita. Like the relation between Shabda and its meaning, as opposed to Paranyama Nayata, which is eternally changing. From the above, it follows that each of the four classical forms of yoga is but an integral part of the yoga system as a whole, as given by Patanjali, with a special emphasis on one or the other aspect of the system, and that these forms constitute a progressive development from Mantra Siddhi to Raja Yoga, each step paving the way for the next higher stage on the yogic path. To make yoga more practicable, distinctions were made in latter times for different types of people based on individual temperaments and vocational pursuits. While the persons who were highly intellectual and reasoned out everything very often took to Jnana Yoga, or the Yoga of Knowledge, those with the emotional temperament were offered Bhakti Yoga, or the Yoga of Devotion, consisting of devotional exercises like singing and chanting of hymns and psalms, as did Princess Meera and Chatayana Mahaprabhu. Again, those who were primarily engaged in the outer activities of the world were considered as best fitted for Karma Yoga, or the yoga of action, consisting of austerities like fasts and vigils, performance of yajnas, and other charitable acts, meritorious deeds like pilgrimages to holy places and reading of scriptures, etc., and above all, the path of selfless duty. In this way, there arose the three types of popular yogas, namely those of head, heart, and hand, signifying jnana yoga, bhakti yoga, and karma yoga. These yogas find their first clear and unequivocal exposition in the Bhagavad Gita. And Lord Krishna stands in the same relationship to them as does Patanjali to the four traditional types. But it must be noticed that these three types cannot be classified into watertight compartments. Each of them can be hardly practiced by itself to the total exclusion of the others. They simply indicate the predominant and inherent traits in the nature of the aspirants. A mere theoretical knowledge of yoga without devotion and action is just like a tree bereft of foliage and fruit, fit only for the woodcutter's axe. Again, devotion per se is meaningless unless one has an intellectual grasp and a factual experience of the thing and actively strives for it. Actions by themselves, whether good or bad, without devotion and knowledge, keep one in perpetual bondage, like fetters of gold or steel, as the case may be. For both sorts have their equally binding force and efficacy. This world is a karma kshetra, or a field of action, and all acts performed on the plane of the senses without discriminating knowledge and loving devotion bear fruit, which the doer has of necessity to gather up, whether he wills it or not. It is only action performed without attachment and desire for the fruit thereof that can bring freedom. One has therefore to become nekarma in this karma bahumi, to escape from the wheel of karmic bondage. The law of karma is stern and inexorable, and one should not unnecessarily go on doing karmas endlessly and remain in eternal bondage. He alone is free from the binding effect of karmas who communes with the holy word, Guru Amar Das. The yoga system thus is, in essence, one integrated whole and cannot be split into any artificial classifications. The Bhagavad Gita or the Song Celestial, which preeminently is a yoga sutra, the prince of yogins, Lord Krishna, gave a clear exposition of the various types of yoga to his Kshatriya prince, Arjuna, so as to bring home to him the importance of Swadham, or the path of duty, as defined from various angles, for work is nothing but worship in the true sense of the word, if one realizes it as such and does it without attachment to the fruit thereof. And I'll end right there. Thank you all for listening. I was reading from the chapter 2, the basis of ancient yoga, the path of yoga in theory and practice, chapter 2. And then I skipped to Raja Yoga on page 99 and finished at the end of the Raja Yoga section. Thank you again.
And thank you, Rudy, for reading for us. There were 51 people at this evening's satsang. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And thank you, Master, for providing this for us.
Love knows service and sacrifice. Love beautifies everything. Love knows no burdens. Love knows giving, not taking.